This is Sports 180 as we begin the third and final hour this afternoon. Thank you for being with us. Sports Talk will take over coming up at 3 o'clock. We began the show talking about the news of the return of the PGA Tour. Now, it's not returning right away, but they did announce a revised calendar of events for 2020. And if everything goes as planned, we are going to have a busy fall in the sports world, because with the NFL and college football right now very much planning to be in action as they are scheduled, the fall will also include the U.S. Open in mid-September up in New York and the Masters November 9th through the 15th at Augusta. That would fall in line the same weekend as Tennessee and Georgia in college football. So in the middle of September, right after the NFL has just started up, I guess that would be week two of the NFL. You'd be a couple of weeks into the college football season. You would also have the U.S. Open. The following week, you would have the Ryder Cup, Heather Harrington, and then the Masters in November, as the NFL is in full swing at that point and college football is coming down the backstretch of the regular season.
And don't forget, there's been other key things that we circle on our calendar that have been moved to the fall as well, including the Kentucky Derby, possibly NBA playoffs.
Yep, Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, so, I mean, there is a lot going on. And for everybody that's going to just be, you know, clawing, it really is like trying to get through a desert. Your canteen has run out of water. That's the period that we're in right now. And then whenever we get to the fall, it's going to be like being in this beautiful oasis that's actually real, and you can just gorge yourself on all the most beautiful sports that we know and appreciate and love.
And those are major tournaments. The PGA Tour is planning and hoping to get underway before then. The first confirmed event right now by the PGA Tour would be the PGA Championship, August 3rd through the 9th, with the season-ending FedEx Cup playoffs event coming up as well. But they're hoping to play in mid-June. It is not confirmed yet, but they are hoping to play a PGA Tour event June 15th through the 21st. Golf Digest reported earlier today that that was their hope before this information was released, and that the plan would include to return to action in mid-June without fans. Now, what would happen in the fall would be subject to change, and I'm sure they're hoping to have fans at those events, just like the NFL and college football will hope to as well. But right now, it would seem that the hope of the PGA Tour is to return to action the week of June 15th, probably right now without fans. But it still would be golf. It would be sports, and maybe that would help set up the return of other sports. Now, golf is a different sport and allows for easier physical distancing than basketball would or baseball would. And, of course, football would be several weeks later. But still, they'd like to get back to practice and all of that. But if we get golf, maybe that would be the start of something else in the sports world. That's at least, I think, the hope of a lot of people.
Yeah, and also something to keep an eye on, NASCAR still has like May 8th kind of circled on their calendar as a return to work date. I would be surprised by that. Maybe they just are kind of letting as much time go before they make that decision. But you still, like, when you're talking about your pit crews and things like that, you've got a lot of people in a very small area, so that doesn't seem like that would be very conducive. I think you point out correctly that golf, it's being played in wide open places. They can physically distance themselves while one member is walking up to the tee box. You know, you would really just have to have...
Yeah, you can publicly go play right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I had a friend, shout out to Iguani Farms. He was playing at Iguani over the weekend, said it, of course, was in great shape. So he was very excited to get outside and take advantage of this beautiful weather that we have going on in the East Tennessee area. But that's a reminder, too. Our golf cards are still on sale. We do have a few left, so you can log on to 99.1 The Sports Animal and check out the sweet deal golf cards where you get a ton of golf for $139. But yeah, I think it just makes the most sense. And if we get it, I wonder how many people that have never watched golf before have always equated golf to, oh, I'd rather go watch grass grow or paint dry. I wonder if they would jump on the golf bandwagon because it is the lone sport being played.
We had Larry McReynolds from Fox on the show on Friday afternoon, and he said their data from the Texas event, or I guess the first two weekends of iRacing, showed that they had viewers who had not watched a NASCAR race last year. Doesn't mean they had never watched before, but same could be said in golf. Maybe you can get fans back into it and then try to hold on to some of those fans when the real events occur, referring to NASCAR, and then, of course, when everything is in full swing in the golf world. So just some interesting news there as the PGA Tour has revised the schedule and is hoping to get back to action in mid-June. And that is still a little more than 2 months away, so it's a reminder it's not all happening, but at least Wills might be in motion. Brian Windhorst of ESPN earlier today was on Get Up, and he had a statement that he wanted to make sure to pass along in terms of what the NBA is thinking and planning and will need to get back to action. This was Brian Windhorst on ESPN earlier today talking about what the NBA would need to return to action.
I'm going to say this very clearly. Testing, testing, testing. Forget about fans and arenas. Forget about bubbles. The only way this is happening is with mass testing that is available, political free, where you don't have to worry about taking it away from somebody who needs it, and you can get quick results. Until there's testing, everything that we're talking about here is pie in the sky. Right. That's the reality that is shown us in Asia. That's the reality the NBA has.
Remember, the Chinese Basketball Association was hoping to get back to action with some American players going back over there to get ready to play. I think in 9 days is when they were planning to start back up, and then they got delayed again. So I don't know what that means for the NBA, but there is still more to be done than where things are right now, which is probably a pretty obvious statement, but a reminder as well that it's not as easy as maybe we want to make it out to be, that I might want to make it out to be as well for July. But I would also still say they're probably targeting that month, I would think. Major League Baseball and the NBA are trying to think, if we can get back to action in July, we can salvage this year's seasons.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're correct. Whenever you look at it, it would be better at this point in time to have a shortened season than just lose the season altogether. I mean, that's not rocket science. I'm not telling anybody things that they don't already know, but I do think there are finite limits. Like, if you're still looking at September and Major League Baseball hasn't started, is it realistic to play a season starting September 1st for Major League Baseball? I mean, they would have to really, I mean, they would be going up against two behemoths for their whole season, and that would be the NFL and Major League Baseball. So how much, not Major League Baseball, college football. So I don't know what the contingency plan would be if they aren't able to get started in July. Do they just scrap everything? Do they try to play even a smaller, shorter season? I mean, there's just still things that are so much in the works that we won't know until a couple of weeks down the road or a month down the road how realistic they are.
I'm sure that all of these sports will do whatever they can to salvage revenue. Yeah, like Major League Baseball, they don't want to lose a season's worth of revenue. The NBA would love to get the postseason revenue, even if it's altered, if it's adjusted. I'm sure they would love to get what they can.
What's the shortest season, or I guess what's the least amount of games Major League Baseball would put out as a season? Like, as far as a total?
What's the shortest they'd be willing to go? I have no idea. I don't know, 60 to 80 games, somewhere in that range. 81 would be half.
Mm-hmm.
So something like that?
Yeah. Or I was wondering, you know, if this does continue on and say they could only get 45 games in, or 40, or if you wanted to do an even number, whatever. I don't know. I would be curious to see what's the least amount of games they would play, or would they scrap the season?
Yeah, you probably don't want to get down so far to where the postseason is almost as long as the regular season. I don't know, but I'll again say they'll do what they can to salvage the season. I'm sure about that. And right now, again, my guess would be that Major League Baseball hopes to get going in July and would probably make plans to do that without fans in place. And then if you can work fans back into the season as it goes along, then you try to do that. That would be my guess right now.
Yeah, I think you're right. And again, I think everybody is on target, and rightfully so, to have penciled in for the beginning of July. I mean, no data has suggested at this point that that's far-fetched or definitely not going to happen. So I think you build from there and you assess it every week. I mean, this is still a week-by-week conversation. So in 2 weeks, our conversation might be completely out the window and there's still not enough testing that's available, and there's still spikes in rates, and there's no way people are going to be gathering, or everything that we're doing now could be working. There could be access to a lot more tests, and people could feel safe returning to group activities by the beginning of June. I mean, or July. It's just, it's so up in the air right now.
Do you think we will have sports again?
Yes. Yes, I do think we will have sports again. It is just so wild. And we were talking about this behind the scenes while we were getting ready for the show. To think back to the last time that some of these historic, like with the Open Championship just outright canceling this year, the last time they canceled an Open Championship was for World War II in 1945. I mean, that's just mind-blowing that sports are so ingrained in our lives that you have to go all the way back to World War II to find a time that that event didn't take place.
Yeah. By the way, we should at some point, not right now, we have other stuff to worry about. At some point, we need to re-shame Major League Baseball for canceling the end of the 94 season over the strike. What an embarrassment for that sport. We'll come back. Not that you didn't know about that one. We'll come back here on Sports 180-656-9900 if you would like to join us. So we're trying to get sports back. It's just going to take a little bit more time. We'll talk about that. All-decade teams from the NFL coming out today. We'll update you on what happened there with a couple of VFLs being named to the list. That's right here on Sports 180 on FM 99.1, the sports animal.
We got an I-24. Oh! Richard Blutch is waving a hammer up high. Oh, we got Charles Kings in the iPad up high. We got two winners. Look at this, the board.
That audio courtesy CBS News, that's Matthew McConaughey. He hosted a virtual bingo game for a senior living home in Texas. So McConaughey on the play-by-play there, Heather Harrington. How about that? A little Zoom bingo.
Hey, whatever is helping these celebrities pass the time in their huge mansions and their pools, and, you know, I'm sure they are missing being in the public eye. So, yeah, good for Matthew McConaughey. Use his celebrity for something good.
Yeah, I mean that's got to be pretty cool for the folks there. I'd like for Matthew McConaughey to host a sports animal Zoom bingo game.
Oh, that would be really fun. I am really good at bingo, so you better watch out because I am, you know, basically an old lady. But yeah, I'm very good. One on a cruise.
Well, I used to not be very good. But Larry David had a couple of really good tips. You got to listen. You got to pay attention. If you do, you become a really good bingo player. And since then, my game has gone to a completely different level. I think that's my favorite underrated Curb Your Enthusiasm episode, and that is when he's playing at his father's retirement home in the bingo games and believes the games are being fixed. And he asks the president or director or whatever of the retirement home to investigate the bingo games. And, of course, Larry took this very seriously.
Crazy conspiracy theories are woven in throughout the fabric of Curb Your Enthusiasm, including the last season, the season 10 with the ugly section. Just spoiler alert for those that have not watched it. Larry is convinced that there is a restaurant in town that has a hot section and an ugly section. He is very mad that he keeps getting sat in the ugly section.
Yeah, how did I end up here was the question he asked very loudly within the restaurant. Favorite episode of the season? I would go with the John Hamm episode. Which way would you go?
Yeah, John Hamm's going to be hard to beat, especially the Richard Lewis line. Oh, my gosh. The revelation that takes place. So I would say the John Hamm episode. Also, the most cringeworthy, that was so funny that I laughed out loud in my bedroom a couple of times, is when Leon kept leaving a certain inanimate object around, and it caused quite a stir, quite a controversy.
Big stir. I think that's fair to say. Big. So, Curb Your Enthusiasm recommended. Just go in with an open mind, I guess, toward the show as well. 656-9900 is the phone number if you would like to. Hey, thanks for hanging on. Good afternoon. What's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to talk to you all about some high school football, and do you think that there will be a high school football season, or will it be shortened? And if it is shortened or, heaven forbid, completely canceled, what will that do for college recruiting?
Well, Heather, I don't know would be my answer, but one thing that I would guess would be that you start at the top and you work your way down. I don't think there's college football if the NFL's not in place, and I don't think there's high school football if college football is not in place. So I think it starts at the professional level. That would be throughout sports, but specific to football here. My guess is that there will be. So what do I think? What would I guess? I would guess yes is the answer. If there's not high school football, obviously that hurts from the recruiting standpoint, because you don't have the games and the extra film that can be there. Right now, evaluations are a challenge, and Jeremy Pruitt, when he did his conference call last week, he talked about the challenges for the 2022 class, so that's the upcoming junior class of players. But there are still seniors out there who are hoping to get seen and noticed,
yep.
And they're going to be negatively affected, I would say, by the cancellation of camps over the next few months. So, of course, yeah, there could be a hit to some players' opportunities in recruiting. So we hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah, and like Knox County and some of the other school districts around here have not come out and said anything about the fall being pushed back or the start time being affected in any way. So we would just have to cross that bridge when we got there. But, you know, you say, well, if the NFL isn't happening, then college football isn't happening, then high school football isn't happening. But it actually chronologically is in reverse order, with high school football starting first, and then you have college football that gets going, and then the NFL. So, I mean, you're just going to have to get to the point, I think, over the summer when teams are invited to come back and invited to engage in practices. And whenever you get there, then you would think it would be full steam ahead to at least start the season. And who knows where it goes? I mean, do you have to play a shortened season because the virus sparks back up in the fall when weather starts getting cool? I mean, there are just so many unknown factors, but it would throw a huge monkey wrench into the recruiting process and just into those kids' lives, because that's a lot to deal with how their schoolwork has been affected. Because that's another thing, if you're not staying on top of your schoolwork right now, that could also impact your recruitment if you've got some areas to make up whenever you're back in your actual classroom. So those high school kids have definitely been dealing with a lot, and hopefully they won't have to deal with their season being abbreviated or canceled altogether.
Yeah, you're right. And you are correct. The high school season starts earlier. Surely, though, well before that, we'll have an idea of what the NFL is doing, because the NFL begins camp much earlier. Camp begins in July. So I don't know if we'll have a full answer on what happens in terms of fans in the stadiums and all that. Maybe we will. But the NFL will be getting back to activity if they're going to start September 10th in July. So we should have a much better idea by then.
Yeah.
Or before then, I should say.
Yeah, and then high school football, you know, they'll have to go through their acclimation period. But yeah, you're right. I mean, we will know so much more, I think, in the next 3 weeks. I think this week is going to be a hard week, just preparing everybody. I know it's Monday, it's beautiful outside, so soak in all that positivity, because I do think, especially if you're somebody that just watches the news and gets the latest updates, there could be some bad ones that come out this week. And that's kind of what the prognosticators, who are the experts, that's what they were kind of predicting. But I think after Easter, you can start looking towards the positives if the experts are correct. You know what I mean? Like, I think you pay attention for sure to this week, and then we will know if we are starting to turn a corner or not.
We do have the Tiger slogan from Dabo Swinney, so I think that's all we need to rely on.
I think we just need to play that.
This is going to end really soon.
Yeah. Yeah. We're America. What we do is we win. We kick people's butts. That's what I garnered from Dabo's comments with back-to-back World War champions, making it to the moon first, driving a car on Mars. I mean, leave it to America. We're going to beat this thing, and everybody in the world is just going to thank us.
Yeah, I'm sure that's how it's going to play out. So remove all data and science. Let's just go with the Tigers mantra. We'll come back. Another half hour to go. Another Hall of Fame resume item for Eric Berry. We'll tell you about it when we come back right here on FM 99.1, The Sports Animal. This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us on this Monday afternoon. We'll hit the power poll at the end of the hour to close out the show. I'm going to rank the top five Lady Vols, with Tamika Catchings deservedly going into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. So that's coming up at the end of the hour. Little NFL for you here in this segment, as the NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell just informed clubs in a memo that club facilities will remain closed indefinitely and the league will conduct a, quote, fully virtual draft April 23rd through the 25th with club personnel separately located in their homes. This could get very interesting for some NFL executives who may not be as well versed in the virtual world as some others.
Yeah, what's
looking at you, Dave Gettleman?
Yeah, that's a really good one that you pointed out. I wonder how Snyder would handle that as well. But this comes on the heels of, remember, the New Orleans Saints last week went ahead and made a war room in a brewery. So they set up their big board. They had all kinds of telecommunications equipment installed so that they can have a certain amount of people, because you still can't have more than 10 people in any sort of gathering. That's frowned upon by the CDC at this point. Not going to happen. So they have under that limit, and then they have the ability to access other people that would be in on the decision-making process, whether it be scouts or whomever. So I wonder if anybody else is going to look to setting up like a conference room or anything like that, maybe renting a house to get the maximum number of people that they can in one place safely, and then have everybody else kind of Skyping and Zooming in.
What if it gets hacked? You got to make sure you got security set up, right?
Yeah, no kidding. And that's legit. I mean, the next scandal that we're going to hear about is Bill Belichick Zoom bombing people and recording it and then saying, no, we really didn't do that. So, yeah, you got to be very careful. Nobody trusts anybody in the NFL. I think they are the true OGs of paranoia. And then it trickled down to college coaches. But, yeah, I think...
I meant actual hackers, by the way. I didn't think about another scandal for the Patriots with the. But actually, that's a great idea. If Bill Belichick finds out about hacking on the internet, he'll just hire somebody to check in on what some of the teams are doing at the top of the draft.
Who did you think was going to hire these hackers? Or you just thought hackers were just going to be doing it on their own, just to wreak havoc?
Yeah, with the third pick, the Detroit Lions select Seymour Butts, University of Wisconsin. So that's another idea out there for the NFL. On a serious note, the NFL 2010 All-Decade Team was released earlier today, and Eric Berry was on the team, along with Earl Thomas and Eric Weddle at safety. Eric Berry has been one of the best players in the NFL, and unfortunately, to no fault of his own, he has had to overcome so many obstacles to be on the field. When you think about his torn ACL, came back from that, was great. He then had to battle cancer, came back, was the best in the league at his position, and then had the torn Achilles, which has been, from a physical standpoint in trying to return, his biggest setback. And I'm hoping that we see him play football in 2020. But I also think that's an incredible statement of how well Eric Berry is thought of in the NFL. This is not some website that has put this out. This is from the NFL, and Eric Berry, having played a little more than half of the decade, meaning he missed almost half of the decade, he's still regarded as an all-decade team member. I would put this on the resume. I will put this on the resume when I try to make the case for Eric in the Hall of Fame in 5, 6, 7 years, whatever that's going to end up being, because his body got in the way of him being able to pick up even more achievements. But look at the way he's played on the field. The NFL has said it. He's the best in the business.
Yeah, 5 times he was a Pro Bowler. 3 of those times he was a first-team All-Pro, the 2015 AP Comeback Player of the Year after battling cancer. And I've never had the privilege of talking to Eric post that cancer diagnosis and what he had to do to battle back. But I just kind of rewind my brain to last week when we were talking to Chris Lofton and his battle of cancer in the off season, getting ready for his senior season, and how much weight he had lost, what that did to his body, what it did to him cardiovascularly, and what he had to overcome. So for Eric Berry to go through cancer treatment, lose the weight that he did, I'm assuming, because, you know, he had a lot of bulk on him being a football player. You're going to lose some of that, having to battle back, and then being the best player on the field, where it's recognizable. Guys want to hand you an award because they recognize how much work you put in and how good you were to be the comeback player of the year. It also happened to Adrian Peterson. Remember, after he tore his ACL, I mean, he was just incredible that next season. So, I mean, for Eric Berry to do that, I think is a huge, I think that's going to be one of his big bullet points on his resume when you're talking about he's getting introduced in Canton at the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, so added to his list of achievements in the NFL, and I don't think anybody really doubted that Eric was respected in the league, but this is a statement of how respected he was. So Eric Berry, and still is, Eric Berry, along with Earl Thomas and Eric Weddle, all-decade safeties. You have Devin Hester and Cordarrelle Patterson, another VFL there, at the kick return positions. Your quarterbacks are Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. So Brady was on the 2000s and the 2010 all-decade teams.
Yeah, Alan Bell had pointed out on Cordarrelle Patterson, he's got the longest kickoff return, that record, with 109 yards. He's tied for first in most seasons leading the NFL in kickoff returns. He did that three different years. He's second right now with highest career average in kickoff returns at 29.98 yards. And then he's tied for second in most kickoff return touchdowns with six. I mean, that is really incredible when you look at his resume and why he was chosen to be on the all-decade team.
Yeah. I mentioned earlier, I think at the end of his career, Cordarrelle could be considered the greatest kick returner of all time. He's already in the conversation, but he will be in that. And then after that, you brought up earlier, what's the future of the position? I mean, we may not see it this way in the future. So, Cordarrelle Patterson, one of the greatest kick returners of all time, no matter what.
Yeah, I knew he was special when he was here at Tennessee for what he was doing and the playmaking ability that he showed. But did you have any idea he was going to be this at the NFL level?
Well, that he might go down as the best kick returner of all time. I mean, that's difficult to predict. I thought he'd be really good. Yeah, and I mean, he was a first-round pick. He's been a disappointment as a receiver, realistically. He has not worked out in that regard. But as a return man, yeah, he's as good as you could ever ask anybody to be.
Yeah, and maybe I thought that, you know, he would be known for his playmaking ability. I mean, some of those spin moves that he had whenever he was playing the wide receiver position. I mean, some of the balls that he caught while he was at Tennessee, maybe that's what I thought he would be known for. I just didn't see this coming. And I agree with you. It's hard to predict you're going to be the best at like one particular aspect of the game. But I think it just shows what a playmaker he was and how special of a player he is. I mean, it's just mind-blowing.
Hey, Joel, your thoughts on this. One question we had, at tight end, you have Rob Gronkowski, who is an obvious choice, and then Travis Kelce as the second tight end. And Matt asked, what about Jason Witten or Travis Kelce? So Witten has a career where he's going to be a Hall of Famer. He will not be an all-decade team member in either decade. And it's difficult to make that list. But Travis Kelce or Jason Witten, what would you say there? And these conversations are difficult because careers, of course, they span over multiple decades in a lot of ways. So you're taking part of the back end of Jason Witten's career when a lot of the good that he did came in the 2000s as well.
That's tough too, just because you have, you know, I think Kelce is the more explosive playmaker at the position. Jason Witten is obviously very consistent. He's just, he's kind of, both of them are do-it-all guys. And I think with what we're seeing with these more athletic type of tight ends that we're seeing in the league, that's going to make room for more guys like Kelce and Gronk. So it's really, really difficult to say. I think both guys are Hall of Fame tight ends. Witten certainly is going to be a Hall of Fame tight end, but when you consider all the records that he broke, it's also just a part of it is that a good chunk of Witten's career came outside of that decade. So I feel like the longevity should play a role into it. But if we're talking about what happened in the past decade, it's really, really tough to determine because Witten has kind of played the entire decade. Kelce came in, I believe, in 2013. So still a significant portion of it. That is actually a really tough call. That's a good question thrown out there on Twitter.
I think Kelce's ceiling has been higher, right? That's the biggest thing. Okay. Yeah, I think when you're looking at Jason Witten, I think he has been a model of consistency. I just don't think his ceiling has been as high and as explosive as what Travis Kelce has been, although he would very much be like number three or number four in the conversation. I think Jimmy Graham would also be in that conversation, don't you think? I mean, I think Jimmy Graham even had a higher ceiling than what Jason Witten did over the past 10 years.
Yeah, I think Witten had a really respectable decade, but would not be one of the top two guys overall from the decade. And it's a position that kind of took off as well. But yeah, Jimmy Graham is a good one to bring up because he has some consistency and some incredible numbers. He had a 99-catch, 1,300-yard season with the Saints, and in a different season had 16 touchdowns, four double-digit touchdown seasons.
And he was such a game-changer at the tight end position. I mean, he was like demanding wide receiver money because he's like, dude, I catch the ball more than some of the wide receivers on my team. I want some of that money. So he's a game changer there too.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I might go Graham over both of these guys. That tells you how competitive this can be. But Eric Berry, all decade in the NFL, and I would say that he deserves. We will come back for a final segment with the Power Poll, and then Sports Talk will take over at 3 o'clock right here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Thank you for being with us on Sports 180 this afternoon. Sports Talk's going to take over coming up at 3 o'clock. Heather, we at least received news today about the return of sports with the anticipation of it happening. So that was a good thing today. It's all about taking the proper steps moving forward. It's not like sports were just going to show up and be a full go tomorrow. So the PGA Tour announcing plans for this year, that's at least something I think to get people going for the return of it when that happens. And there's the potential of the return of the PGA Tour in the middle of June. That appears to be what they're focusing on right now.
Yeah, and it's all good news. It seems like it's still fluid, so maybe don't get totally attached to the new schedule. But the idea of having the Masters in November and then you're going to turn right around and have the Masters in April 2021... it goes to show that if you get hot, maybe over the summer and into the fall, you could really make some big paychecks if you're a professional golfer on the PGA Tour, because you're going to have the Masters, U.S. Open, and PGA Championship all within like a three-month span. So that could be very exciting for professional golf fans.
No doubt. John Wilkerson joins us, says Sports Talk will take over coming up at 3 o'clock. John, good afternoon. How are you?
Doing well. Hope you guys are.
We're doing very well. We talked a little bit about the NFL All-Decade team coming out, which is just is so incredibly difficult to put together because some players' peaks, they cover maybe multiple decades in different times, and then, of course, just how many good players you have to consider. But Eric Berry on the All-Decade team from the NFL.
Yeah, Eric Berry, Cordarrelle Patterson, a couple of VFLs that get their names where they should be. Really kind of puzzled that since they do have a measure – that Morgan Cox or any long snapper doesn't get any kind of recognition for the All-Decade team. I think Cox with the Ravens would have been the guy considering all the times that he's made it to the Pro Bowl. And a lot of times that's just based on who you snap for. But the fact that Justin Tucker's there, Morgan Cox should be there. And I think you could really make an argument for Jason Witten to be on that list as opposed to Travis Kelce, although each were five-time Pro Bowlers or five times all pro over the last decade. So anyhow, great to see Eric Berry, very deserving. Cordarrelle Patterson, when you look at what he's meant to special teams, but to also see who else could have been there. Yeah, that's nothing like a great debate at this time of year.
I like that. Giving the long snapper their due. I like that. You're a man of the people, John.
That's how I've always approached my run for public office.
Got my endorsement. John Wilkerson on with us, getting ready for Sports Talk. Before that, let's hit today's Power Poll.
Captain, we're losing power in the warp engine.
Nuclear power pants.
What's up? I'm Kenny Powers.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
I have the power!
With great power comes great responsibility.
Full power, Mr. Scott.
The Power Pole, driven by Ted Russell Ford. Two locations to serve you, Kingston Pike and Parkside Drive.
Alrighty, John. So Tamika Catchings was voted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, the first Lady Vols player to go in to the Naismith Hall of Fame. We thought today we would rank the top five all-time Lady Vols, and you can factor in the pro career as much as you want to, what they did as a Lady Vol, however you want to take it, John, with your top five.
All right. Well, I sure do appreciate that. I will start with an honorable mention with Holly Warlick. She was the first Lady Vol to have her number retired. But at number five, I will go old school, Cindy Brogdon. She was a three-time All-American. This was before, of course, you had the NCAA tournament, but Cindy Brogdon was a three-time All-American. Number four, Kara Lawson. Number three, Tamika Catchings. Number two, Candace Parker. And number one, Shamiqua Holdsclaw.
Yeah, John, I thought Holdsclaw would have been in the Naismith Hall of Fame, and I hope she still gets in. That kind of caught me off guard with Tamika being the first. That obviously means that Shamiqua was not in.
Yeah, I would have, and I think it's going to happen. But when you just look at it being the Basketball Hall of Fame, all that Tamika's career has involved, just all of the multiple gold medals, WNBA championship, a record setter, career records in terms of the WNBA, as well as all she did at the University of Tennessee, I think that Tamika is a very deserving first choice to break that seal.
Heather Harrington, your top five Lady Vols.
It also just goes to show, John, the Naismith Hall of Fame, they're just behind the times. They need to catch up, right? My number five, I'm going to go old school. And some people might disagree with this, but she was on early championship teams. She was a two-sport athlete. She also played volleyball. And that's Bridget Gordon at the number five spot. I just feel like if you have that much athleticism, you could probably translate and be an all-timer. So Bridget Gordon, number five. Four for me is going to be Deidre Charles. Number three is going to be Tamika Catchings. Two is Shamiqua Holdsclaw. And number one, I've got Candace in there. I think she's such a game changer with her size, with the way she's able to handle the ball. So that is no disrespect to Shamiqua or Tamika Catchings. Candace is number one for me.
Very understandable pick. John, I kind of went like I went with my Mount Rushmores when I put them together, even though this is the fifth spot. I have Holly Warlick, number five. The Rafters note that you mentioned, the first ever jersey retired up there, number 22. So I have Holly Warlick, number five. Bridget Gordon, number four. And then our list look very similar. I have Tamika Catchings, number three. I do go Shamiqua, number two, like Heather. And then Candace Parker, number one. It is difficult trying to balance pro, college. Shamiqua's impact at Tennessee put her at number two for me, ahead of Tamika. Tamika, with what she's doing post-playing career as an executive in the WNBA, her impact on the sport is going to be ongoing as well. But a big three, it looks like, from all three of us, with Tamika, Shamiqua, and Candace Parker, with Lady Vols history and so many other players that, of course, are deserving in the conversation. That's why the program, with what it's done, you got to get more players in to the Naismith Hall of Fame. That is the Power Poll, the top five Lady Vols in program history. John Wilkerson, what's coming up next on Sports Talk?
Well, we look forward to being joined by Dr. Terry Punch from 3:30 until 4:30. Will West will jump on board with us to run down his mock draft, his first mock draft. And just like yours or mine, I believe it will be more than mockable. Rob Lewis of AllQuest.com at 5:05. Steve Forbes, ETSU hoops coach, he'll join us at 5:35. Tonight, of course, would have been the national championship game. Jeremy Pruitt, we've got more of his comments from his video teleconference on Friday. We've got our trivia challenge with the Sports Fix at 6. All that and more today on Sports Talk.
A busy afternoon ahead. John Wilkerson, we appreciate the time as always. Look forward to Sports Talk in just a few minutes.
Sure do appreciate it. You guys have a great night.
You too. We appreciate you being with us here on Sports 180 today. We'll be back tomorrow at noon. Joel Silverberg, thank you very much. Heather, see you tomorrow.
All right, we'll see you, Josh.
Thanks for being with us today. Sports Talk is next here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.